time for Hanson McLean Advisors Money Matters, hosted by Scott Hanson and Pat McLean. Credentialed financial advisors serving you since 1993.
Welcome to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean. Thanks for joining us.
Absolutely. Both myself and my co-host, we're both financial advisors. We spend our weekdays working with people like yourself, helping them with their finances, helping them get ready for retirement, transition into retirement, those sorts of things. And we come here on the weekends to be your financial advisors on the air. So whether you have advisors you're working with today or you do everything on your own, you just want a second opinion, whatever the case may be, consider us your advisors on the air this weekend.
Yeah, I'd love to help. If you'd like to join the show, 916-921-1530. So that's 921-1530. Or alternatively, you can send us an email at questions@moneymatters.com, questions@moneymatters.com.
That's right, and then we'd love to be able to help answer some questions, that sort of thing. Anyway, glad you are here with us this weekend. And you know, part of I find financial planning an interesting.
Why?
The other day I was talking to. I was talking to this guy at the gym that used to be in some sort of financial services, and he was telling me that he's investing in BDCs, business development companies, which is essentially it's a way a corporation structured where if you pass through all the income, it doesn't get double taxed.
Did he use the word BDCs?
Yeah, he used the word BDCs.
Okay,
why do you ask?
Guess it's you wouldn't say I. You know, you wouldn't say I'm investing in a corporation. You'd say, oh, I'm buying Intel or I'm buying HP.
Yeah, my point is this. Some of these business development corporations are getting pitched to individual investors because of the high yields. And he said that to him. I said, well, I should be careful. Oh, he said, I said, what's the yield on 9.5% is the one he just bought, yielding 9.5%.
Would you touch that?
Well, no, that was my whole point. So
he looks at it and says, I'm getting 9.5%. And we look at it and saying, yeah, but what happened to your principal?
That's exactly it. How in the world? And you, if someone was credit worthy, can go to the bank and borrow at 4%, 5% maybe. Let's say you have lower credit. You can go to the high yield bond market, borrow at 7%, 8%, 9%. When you've got a company paying out 9.5%.
And look at all the fat in the food chain, too.
By the time these get sold.
Yeah. Yeah, big fat in the food chain.
So,
you know what I would...
Got to be... You need to have a 12%,
15%. This reeks Ponzi.
I don't think it's Ponzi.
It reeks of Ponzi. It certainly reeks of scam.
When something's paying out a 9.5% distribution. So, you know, it's funny. So your thought, the exact same thing as my thought. I wouldn't go any further on due diligence when beyond something's yielding 9.5%. I'm not interested.
Out, 100%.
Right. Which might sound contrary, right? You're listening, thinking, wait a minute, an investment's yielding 9.5%. Why wouldn't you at least be interested to see what's going on there? Well, you earn money a couple different ways. You can loan money to somebody, some entity, a government. Loan money. When you loan money, you get a fixed return. It's a return that's agreed upon.
That's your hope.
You get an interest. You get your principal back at some time in the
future. That's your hope.
The second way is by owning something. You can own an asset, a hard asset like gold. You can own factors of production like a company. When you own something, you will receive value from that either a couple different ways. One is an increased price in that asset, as in, let's say, gold or some other asset, or, of course, goes backwards as well. The second is by whatever earnings that factors of production can generate. So you buy a company.
And you own factors of production.
So when you have an entity that is paying out a 9.5% yield, you've got to say, where are they getting their return? They have to get much greater than 9.5 to be able to pay out.
And if they were actually doing that well, why would you need to borrow that much?
Why would they have to pay out that much in a distribution?
Yeah,
you can buy Apple. So they don't pay out much of a distribution.
So what it tells you is there's tremendous amounts of risk in this.
tremendous amounts of risk on a lot of these business development companies. Many of them are leveraged, so the way they can continue to pay out and closed-end funds, same things. Many of these are highly leveraged, so that in order to get that return, you got to.
So do you really know what you're investing in, though? Do they really know? Do they know, like, it's a printing company in Fresno or
money printing?
So what are the business development companies? At the end of the day, you need to know what is it? Is it like, is it a trucking company out of Bryn Mawr, Pennsylvania, or what is it? Right? Is it an amusement park that's going to compete with Disneyland and Orlando?
So, I mean, there's lots of ways Wall Street can package certain things to make them sound appealing. They could have non-traded type investments where it's...
Which is what this guy is investing in, is this BDC, business development company.
There's non-traded things that don't trade at all. So you don't know what the value is. You can't look at the price every day because it doesn't trade.
And they promise yield, typically?
Promise high yield.
So how long did you have this conversation with the guy at the gym?
He's a nice guy.
Is he?
Yeah. I don't know. I didn't have the conversation long. He told me he was – I forget what kind of financial services company he had that he sold something to. And then he also said closed-end bond funds.
Oh.
Which
that's
are usually
got leverage.
Leverage as well. Which works
so
fine.
His hunt for yield, what he has is a hunt for yield.
Which is a very dangerous thing.
Extremely dangerous.
If all you're sitting there looking at judging the value of an investment by how much they say they're going to distribute to you each month, that's where you can get it. That's why I just started out this whole realm of investing can be complicated.
Yes.
It's not always as simple as what it seems. So. Anyway, 921-1530, if you want to be part of the program. Again, 921-1530. And why don't we start off with, let's see. Let's talk to Aubrey.
Aubrey.
Hi.
Hi. Hey, Aubrey, so you've probably been asked this before. The song by Bread, Aubrey was her name?
Yes.
Okay.
I don't know that song.
Definitely. You can sing it for me.
It's and Aubrey.
No, please don't sing.
Name.
Please don't sing. Please don't sing.
I like the song. Anyway, have you heard the song?
I have heard the song. That's where my father got the name, actually.
Isn't that nice?
Named after Bread.
I was a huge fan of Bread back
you
in
were.
The day, yes. It was a little before my time, but I listened to it.
They had the kind of the guitar.
It was during my singer-songwriter phase.
Oh, gosh. Singer-songwriter phase. Was that an afternoon?
Anyway, what can we do for you, Aubrey?
Okay, so I'm a 37-year-old woman. I have four children, ages from 17 to 9. I have a husband who's an injured vet. And prior to him being a vet, we made decent money, but we never saved. We always ate out. We lived paycheck to paycheck, spending all of our money. Currently, my husband's now injured. He cannot work whatsoever. Neither one of us have a college education. I make about $2,600 a month. The military pays him about $500 a month for his injury. What do I do?
His only income is $500 a month?
Yes, sir. Yes. We are fighting that right now. He is only considered 30% injured through the military, but he is unable to walk without a cane.
So have you talked to anyone at Wounded Warriors or any of the nonprofit organizations that help people like you?
We have, and it's the thing about it is we've started the process to reevaluate his situation.
Mm-hmm.
But it takes even took like 2 or 3 years for him to even get his little $500 from.
Yeah. So I would do two things. One is has he applied for Social Security disability?
Recently, yes.
Okay, so I would apply for the Social Security disability. If you get turned down twice on the Social Security disability, then you want to hire a lawyer the third time in. And I would talk to Wounded Warriors.
Okay.
I would call them up, and my gosh, it's terrible. It's awful.
It is.
You've got four kids.
We have four children.
You rent a home or you own a home?
Well, we had lost our home 3 years ago.
Yeah. So you need
advocate to help.
Yeah, you need.
There's got to be some other programs for you.
Yeah.
This isn't what I don't know what you. We haven't got your main question yet, but as we're just hearing this, we're thinking. Yeah. As a U.S. citizen, as a taxpayer, I'm thinking, my gosh, there better be some other programs.
So your question is, how do you start planning for retirement? That's what it says on the screen.
How do I start planning for retirement?
You don't.
How can I start saving for my children now? What can I do?
You don't. 100% of your focus should be actually on getting benefits for your husband. If your husband truly cannot return to the workforce, right, and you would know better than most, if he truly cannot return to the workforce, 100% of your focus should be on getting benefit for him.
So, hey, Aubrey, we got to take a quick break. Stick on hold here for just a moment, and because I want to come back and maybe talk about a couple other options we've got. So 921-1530 is the number. This is Hanson McClain. Stick around. Welcome back to Hanson McClain's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McClain. Thanks for joining us.
If you'd like to be part of the program, 921-1530, or send us a email, questions@moneymatters.com. And we're with Aubrey. Aubrey, you still with us?
I am.
Okay, so if you just join us, we're chatting with Aubrey. We asked her to hold through the break.
Her husband is an injured vet, unable to work. She has four children between the ages of 17 and 9.
37 years old.
And 37 years old. Question is, how do you plan for retirement?
How are you managing to make cash flow work right now?
At $3,100 a month.
Literally, month to month, we pay our rent, we pay our car insurance, we pay our utilities, dot, period, the end, and a little bit for groceries. And literally, at the end of the month, we have nothing left.
And where's your medical insurance coming from?
Medical is literally Obamacare.
Okay.
That's the only thing we could do right now. My job does not give it to us. My husband has VA, and that's the only option.
Yeah.
So retirement. Retirement is when your kids are older, and that's when you're going to have to save for retirement. You just don't.
You don't have it. There's nothing. There's no room. And 100% of your focus should be on fighting whatever stands in the way between your husband and the benefits. And if he truly cannot return to work because of injuries, you would know better than most, then you need to get that benefit. And there are nonprofits out there that act as an advocate. And that's what you need, is that you need an advocate, someone that's gonna go to battle on your behalf.
Okay.
I would send emails to Wounded Warriors, I would apply for Social Security, and maybe I would actually get an attorney. When did you apply for Social Security disability for your husband?
He applied about 6 months ago.
And where is that case now?
He's waiting. They said they would send him a letter, whether they approved it or not. So we're waiting for a letter in the mail.
six months.
You know, I might make some phone calls to a Social Security attorney.
Okay.
Yeah, I would make that phone call. 6 months is a little long, and the benefits of Social Security disability is your children would be eligible for benefit as well if your husband is getting it, and it would change everything for you.
Okay.
Okay. Is I'm wrong?
I think
that the kids. I may be wrong.
I'm trying to remember because they're minors.
They're minors. I'm trying to remember. Oh, yeah.
That one slips.
That
my mind.
One. Okay. Anyway, so that's what you want to do, Aubrey.
Okay.
So our heart goes out to you, truly.
Yeah.
It's
and you know what? I wouldn't worry about retirement right now.
I wouldn't give it another. Your job is to focus on those kids.
Okay. Yeah.
See what benefits you can get for your husband and
get those kids educated.
You know, you're not going to be able to send your four kids to private schools, college. Who cares?
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, I went to junior. I didn't have much money through college. I went to junior college for a couple of years and transferred after that. Saved up some money. So
I went to Sac State, and Joey here, the intern who actually films this, is a student at Sac State.
Okay.
I mean, he got in. Your kids should be able to.
And there's nothing wrong, you know, just because your oldest is probably going to have some friends that are going off to, going to be living the dream in the nice dorm with all that parties and all that.
So what?
Right.
That you don't have. There's no. Don't think that you have some obligation that's to provide your kids for that. Quite frankly, I'm grateful for the experience that I had. I worked all through college. I had to figure out how to come up with the money. I'm grateful for that experience. And if I had someone just give me a big check to send me off to a nice four-year college, I don't know if it would have been a benefit to me or not.
No.
I really, so don't feel that you've got some obligation to send your kid off to this great school and live in the dorms and all those other things.
Right.
You know, that's just reality. So don't feel bad about that.
Find an advocate, Aubrey.
Okay, I will do that.
And if I had the skill set, I'd be your advocate. But I don't.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, we don't know the programs.
We don't know the programs.
Somebody does, though. Who cares about you guys?
So I appreciate the call.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, thank you.
For the service, your husband and everything, too. You know, Pat, doggone, you hear stories like this, and it just... I gotta believe that we do a better job taking care of our vets.
Well, what's frustrating?
I've got to believe there's something there.
What the frustrating part is, they're saying he's 30% disabled, which says that you can work in some capacity. But
if he's not in late 30s with four kids, then something's up, right?
Yeah. Yep. Correct.
Whether it's a physical or psychological, something's up.
Yeah.
That's not normal.
I'm sure he wants to take care of his family.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if... Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
We're both like, wow. Well, yeah. So, anyway, all right. Let's take a quick email here, and then we'll go back to
Now let's take a call.
All right, we'll take the calls. Let's talk to Todd. Todd, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hey, good morning. How are you?
Super.
Good. My question is I'm planning on retiring at a younger age. Based on some circumstance, and I've done some calculations and thoughts on how I'm going to accomplish this, and I just wanted to get any suggestions or approvals or
fire away.
Anything
good.
That you
Perfect.
May have.
Good. This is we like these kind of questions. First of all, how old are you?
I'm 52.
Okay.
And I'll be 52 in February, actually.
When do you plan on retiring?
May of this year.
Okay. And you said some circumstances. Why are you retiring at age 52?
Well, I'm a single father, and I work at a job for 17 years, and the schedule there's a high likelihood the schedule, it is going to change to 24-hour operation, and I cannot accommodate that schedule being a single full-time father.
Okay.
Got it.
And so I have 17 years with the company, and it's I'm in PERS.
Mm-hmm.
And so and I was fortunate enough to have some savings from a previous job, so I was able to purchase my airtime and military time. So at the time of retirement, I'll have probably the estimate is 26 and a half years of service in.
And are you a safety worker?
No.
Okay.
So what will your pension be, retirement income be, come May?
The estimate turning in some sick leave to get that 26.5 years is going to be approximately $3,830.
And what's your salary today?
Well, it's currently $107,000 base figure a year, and by the time taxes and investing and paying for daycare and spousal support, I bring home about $3,600 a month $3,600 to $3,800 a month plus the $1,500,000 that for spousal support.
And are you is there a quadro on your pension that gives her some of the benefit when you retire?
Yeah, it was fortunately when half is half, so I was able to acquire the home and the PERS and the 401 and 457 and IRAs I had to hand over to my ex-wife.
So she doesn't have a claim on your defined benefit monthly pension when you retire?
No, as it clearly states under the CalPERS section, no interest before, during, or after marriage.
And then what do you have saved in 401Ks, IRAs, 457, that sort of thing?
Okay, the 401s and 457, I got approximately 250,000 built back up into that. Another smaller IRA with about 20,000 in it. And so that's about it on that end.
And how's the split, the 250,000, how much is in the 401k and how much is in the 457?
457 has about 35,000 in it now, and I'm contributing 500 a month to catch up. And so I should have about 50,000.
Right. Okay. So, Scott, can he roll money from the 401k to the 457? Do you know?
No, I don't believe it.
To get around that loophole, if you did, it's not legitimate.
Yeah. Okay. So,
do you plan? Are you for sure never? I mean, is your plan to not work ever again, or to not work for a period of time,
or to just return to work part time, or just do something that is better, more flexible to taking care of your child?
Certainly, I would much rather just retire and move on, but the reality is I probably can find seasonal part-time work.
Okay.
And if things end up being more of a hardship than I recognize, I can find another job. That shouldn't be a problem.
How old is your son or daughter?
He's 10 years old.
Okay. And what do you owe on your home?
The balance on that's about $147,000.
So before we start answering your questions, I want you to go to our website, HansonMcLean.com,
yeah.
And I want you to download an ebook called 7 Personal Decision Points.
Okay.
And, not at this very moment.
Well, you don't have to do it, but what it does is these questions that we're asking, right?
Right.
We ask all. You can ask yourself in the 7 Personal Decision Points, and it tells you whether you could make this retirement work or not.
Right
now, I'm up in the air whether you could swing this or not.
Well, the other option that throws me over the top is PERS has a temporary annuity that they have available. And essentially, the example they have in their manual, and probably close to the one that I would take, is you get I would get $500 additional money between now and 59 and a half per month. And then to pay that annuity off, it would cost approximately $200 a month for the remainder of my PERS.
Your life. Term.
Yeah. So not, you know, is once I get to 59 and a half, then I'll be able to get to the $200,000 or so.
So if you're looking at this like, I got to get out. I need a change. I want to spend time with my kid. Then I think, great, you figured out a way to make it work. As far as if you needed to supplement some income from your retirement savings, the money in your 457 can be accessed without any restrictions whatsoever.
Right.
So I would say look at that first. If you needed to take some income from another source, you could set up a series of equal withdrawals from your 401k.
Under 72T. So if you look up under 72T in the tax.
You take out about 3.5% or 4%. Maybe 4% of your account balance can come out. But once you set that up, you got to keep it that way to your 59 and a half. So that's why I think if
that's available on the 401 as well.
That's correct. What you do is you roll it into an IRA and you start a series of substantially equal distributions under 72T, which would provide about $600 a month in income for you off of
that. But I think both of us would really say don't start. You can get access to your 457 without any restrictions once you retire.
Correct.
So I'd say look at supplementing that for a period of time. And if you called and said, look, I'm done with my job. They're going to be changing. I want to be home. I want to be partially retired, spend time with my son. And my plan is to look at some seasonal work to make up the difference. Then I'd say, great. I think we would have a little concern if you start drawing down your retirement retirement assets today.
If you were my brother, I would say, why not try to find a job somewhere else in that in either the state or municipality that you're working. You're 52.
Yeah, well, my goal when I was younger was to retire at 50s.
Well,
so I'm kind of...
and financially...
Well, you can, just it's all based on lifestyle.
Yeah,
right, and we are, like I said, basically out of that 107,000 a year base salary and 120 plus with overtime, I live off about 45 to 50 net yep. a year. So
I'm with you. And the seven personal decision points. The first one is determining how much money you need to live.
Hey, we got a clock here and knocking us.
Okay, well, I'll learn about the 72T, but that doesn't incur any penalties. Just
that is
happen.
Correct once you start it.
Okay.
So appreciate
I'll
the call.
Look into that.
All right.
Thank you, guys.
Right. Wish you well.
Bye.
Thanks. Welcome back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, glad you are here with us on this great... Well, every weekend's a great weekend. It's a weekend. Anyway, if you want to be a part of the program, you can...
Most weekends are good weekends. But most days are good days.
Most days are what you make it, aren't they?
Yeah, most days are good.
I mean, sometimes just external things happen that really can set you sideways. But usually it's our... How we choose to respond to those things that come in.
First world problems, traffic.
There's still problems. My daughter would like to say, Dad, that's a first world problem. Yes, problem. That's problem is the operative term here.
Annoyance.
You want to hear something funny as we're talking?
Please.
So we've lived in El Dorado Hills for 20 some odd years.
Okay.
So my kids, I moved around a lot as a kid. Broken home, bounce around, went to lots of different schools. My idea was I'm going to have a different kind of experience for my kids, going to grow up in the same neighborhood, go to the same school system, which they have. My daughter's now in college. But she would always often make negative comments about El Dorado Hills because it's too uppity or whatever, and just comments like she...
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. She's like, your house is too big, Dad, cars are too... You know, some kind of like poverty sort of mindset or whatever. So she's down in Southern California for college. She gets a part-time job as an assistant coach for girls' high school lacrosse team.
Okay.
In Beverly Hills, of all places.
Oh, is that right? She hasn't seen anything yet.
I laughed so hard when she told me about this. I said, Beverly Hills, are you kidding me?
That's pretentious.
Beverly Hills. Yeah, you're Beverly Hills. You're ripping on El Dorado Hills? That's nothing. A little ranch house in Beverly Hills. Now she's going to see first world problems.
There we go.
Beverly Hills.
And lacrosse team.
Do I drive the kids in the Bentley to school and then have to come back for the sports car? Or do I just take the sports car and pile them in?
My nephew.
Those are tough problems.
My nephew played lacrosse out in Granite Bay. And he called me one day and he said, Uncle Pat, my lacrosse team is going to a tournament. We're raising money to help pay for it. And I said to him.
In Granite Bay.
He said, I could not think of a more deserving charity than... I could not think of a more deserving charity than the Granite Bay lacrosse team.
We can provide soccer balls to third world kids that have no balls whatsoever.
Or...
we got to make sure they stay in a decent hotel.
The Ritz? Or at least a high-end Marriott, minimum. I just laughed. Then I sent him a little money because he was my nephew.
So you didn't have to hear more about it at Thanksgiving time or whatever.
Yeah, I just laughed. I said, I said, Kellen, you know, I know what your dad does for a living, right?
Well, I've been involved in our Oak Ridge High School. Like a lot of high schools have these foundations now to raise some additional dollars because a lot of funding has been cut for music and arts and the sports. So I've been involved in a couple of in some fundraising over the years for them, and I always realize where this should be as far as like if someone's not giving to anything at all, I don't know if that should be like the first place to give.
Yeah, not the first.
No, I mean it's really great to be able to, and I also understand that just because a kid goes to high school in El Dorado Hills or in Granite Bay or in Davis or in the night is some of the more expensive. Not every kid comes from a family that has much. I mean, a lot of people are, families are very tight and they don't have the additional money. So I clearly understand that. But it's just kind of funny sometimes when these nicer areas raise.
Everything's relative.
I suppose there's some relativity to that.
Yeah. But well, there's actually a term for it. It's called relative affluence. What did I read about? A couple articles about relative affluence recently. Oh, it had to do with the income disparity in America, and everyone keeps claiming these income disparities in America, but what they're actually not putting into the calculation is income that comes from governmental
transfers.
governmental sources.
All these other transfers.
Correct. Yeah, they leave that out of the disparity. So once you include Social Security income and disparity and other social programs in that calculation, the disparity is not nearly as large as
disparity.
It's called relative affluence.
I've been to a number of third world countries. I've been in huts that have no water or electricity, where people have to go fetch the water every day. So there's clearly relative
affluence.
Yeah.
Like, because in that town, if you had a scooter, you would be wealthy, right?
Yeah. So, the funny thing, a little motor scooter of some sort.
Yeah.
The funny thing about financial planning, right, because we see it all.
Yes.
We see it all.
We see the rich, rich guy that doesn't act like they have any money, and we see the poor, poor guy that acts like they have a ton, and everything in between.
And financial security is not so much dependent upon your income as it is on the choices that you make with that income.
Normally, lifestyle.
Yes, absolutely. And our hope and goal here as we work with people is to help them have some financial security in their life, to take out some of the stress with their finances. Because there's not necessarily a correlation between more income and more happiness and less problems.
That is correct.
So, anyway, that's one of the things that we enjoy about.
All right. Well, let's take the calls. Can we take the call? She's been waiting.
Okay.
These people have been waiting. I know we're going to get to these texts or emails, Scott, but these people have been waiting. And I'm not that good at waiting. And I appreciate them waiting.
All right, 921-1530 is our number.
We're going to get to these emails because we said we would.
Kent's been waiting. All right, let's talk to Kent. Kent, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure, thanks for calling.
My question revolves annuities. I've listened to you guys for quite a long time, and I generally feel your response to the question of annuities is it's the rare exception. Correct me if I'm wrong about that.
Yeah, there are exceptions. Sometimes I hate annuities, but I like them sometimes.
Okay, so here's I'm asking if this is the exception.
Okay.
I'm a healthy 71-year-old.
I'm having a hard time hearing you. Are you on a speakerphone?
No, I'm not.
There we go. That's
much better. Thank you.
I'll speak a little louder.
No, that's perfect. You need something.
I'm a healthy 71. My wife is 56, and she has about $1 million portfolio of stocks and mutual funds, a quarter of which is self-directed IRA, and three-quarters of which is a taxable account in fairly risky stocks, but she's done very well, as a lot of people have recently. But the point is that her investment advisor is suggesting that she take out essentially it's like an insurance policy. She's calling it an annuity. But it's like an insurance policy that my wife, Teresa, would put in $250,000, and it would stay there for 5 years with no appreciation. I know this sounds silly the more I say it, but no appreciation. But at that point in 5 years, she would begin taking an amount of around $1,600 a month out of that for the rest of her life. If she died before the 5 years, she would get back, her estate would get back the whole $250. If she dies after the 5 years and has taken some of the money out, she would get, her estate would get $250 less payments made. So the concern here, and the reason for the advice is that currently we live on my income, which is about $80,000 a year. And if I die, my Social Security would go away. She would, at some point, would get Social Security, of course. And part of my pension probably will stop. So I'm thinking it's going to be probably $60,000 a year less, $5,000 a month, that she would have to replace. Her current taxable portion of her investments makes around 15, 18. It's a very small amount of dividends. Most of them are just really growth stocks. So the question is this an example or is this an exception to your concern about annuities are not the best thing to do?
This is a good question here. And this is so your wife, has she always made the picks on these investments over the years? Has she had a lot of experience in choosing these investments and whatnot? Or
the answer is yes.
And how did she do during the financial crisis? Emotionally, and did she make bad choices, sell out at the bottom, some of those things, or not?
No, she didn't. She didn't do any of that. She maintained, she did sell a few things, but minor things. She stayed with the risky investments. Her whole portfolio went down approximately, I'm going to guess, 35% during the last downturn. I'm talking the last one being 2008. And but she stayed with it and didn't sell anything. She does buy and sell, but occasionally she'll sell something, but not necessarily due to the fact.
Well,
it's a bad investment.
There's a couple things, and we're gonna hold you over the break to get to all of it.
Okay.
I'm concerned with the product itself.
Yeah.
And the structure of the product, and the fact that your wife, I don't think it's going to solve any problems. And at the backside of the break, we're going to actually hold you over, ask you to stay over the break, Kent, and then we're going to come back and kind of address the issues one by one.
Yeah, so hold just a moment, and we're taking a break. This is Hanson McLean. 921-1530 is the number. Stick around for more Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Welcome back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean. Thanks for joining us.
I'm glad you are here with us on this great weekend. And we're talking with Kent, and we had to hold Kent through the break. And essentially, you're looking at someone is proposing a purchase of an annuity for your 56-year-old wife, $250,000 investment today. Let it grow for 5 years, no withdrawals for 5 years. In 5 year time, they're guaranteeing a $1,600 a month distribution. Is that about sums it up correctly?
Yes.
So here's what happens. So I always kind of like to try to understand what's going on behind the curtain, right? So the insurance company is saying, here's what we're going to provide you. So we know that insurance companies don't make things out of thin air. They go into the marketplace, right? You buy an annuity. What happens? The insurance company takes that money. They hedge all their bets too, right? They got to hedge their bets so they can make sure they can pay them. So they go in the marketplace and they invest these dollars. And this sounds like it's a variable annuity with a some sort of a living benefit rider. Is that right? Does she still have some discretion over how the monies are invested? So if the markets do well, she can participate in that?
I don't think so. The sense that I got from this, and we didn't get anything in writing. I was in this meeting, by the way. But I think it's just to me it was almost like an insurance policy. And my quick other question was, well, why don't I just get a term life insurance policy and I die and she gets income from that? And she, by the way, she's the sole beneficiary of my net worth. So she's going to have money, but it's like in these.
Right. So here's. So
Scott, this may be an insurance policy. It may not be an annuity at all.
It was termed an annuity, but from an insurance company. And you may be right, but that's the way I heard it.
Okay. So what happens when you buy an annuity in the marketplace? If let's say it's a fixed annuity, the insurance company goes out and they invest primarily in investment grade bonds. Some high-grade real estate, that's the majority of their portfolio is invested in fixed income because they need to make sure they can pay this. So with interest rates where they are today, low today, the insurance company is going out and investing in those low areas as well. And in a pure annuity, if her life expectancy is shorter than it should be, then the insurance company wins.
Yes.
If she lives longer than what she's projected to live, then she comes out ahead, essentially.
But the reality is buying an annuity at this place in the market with these interest rates this low, you're buying bond, essentially locking in that low interest rate for the rest of your life. She's very sophisticated. She's got capital gains treatment on the stock. That she sells versus ordinary income.
Let me just interrupt. If I didn't say, this is from her IRA only. This 250 is from her IRA.
Yeah,
I don't see the need.
I don't. So we
have about 4,000 families that we serve at Hanson McLean. I think last year there is maybe two or three times when an annuity was used to solve a problem.
Very rare.
Literally, all year out of 4,000, two or three times.
10 years ago, 12 years ago, when they were priced differently and these benefit riders that they had on there, we used them a little bit more often, but not a ton. It's very rare. And I certainly wouldn't even present this, what you just explained to me.
I wouldn't even
present it to a client. I wouldn't even.
Not given your situation.
You don't need any of this stuff. You don't need any of it. And I like your idea of buying a term life insurance policy. Go to IntelliQuote.
Well, the only problem with that is it's a term could be... if he keeps living long.
But I understand, she's 56 and he's 71.
You may not need the insurance.
You might buy a 5 or 10 year level term if you need anything at all.
Okay.
But I would not touch this annuity.
I don't. Okay. Yeah, I wouldn't recommend it.
Well, it wouldn't. For no other fact that you're locking in really low interest rates for a long, long time.
That's exactly what you're doing.
And sounds like good advice.
All right. Well, I appreciate the call.
Thanks, Kent. Yeah.
Okay, guys. Thank you very much.
All right. And there was definitely times.
I really was. I think he was hoping we would say we didn't like it. Because he didn't like it. He started by saying he listens to the show. He says that we sparingly recommend annuities. Sparingly. They're not my favorite. All right. Now, we're going to go to the email questions, because people email us at questions@moneymatters.com, and then we take this.
Hey, let's answer this one on annuities, because this is an annuity, right? Here's the question. I have heard that nobody lost any money on annuities during the Depression of the 1930s. Do you still think annuities are a good idea if things go so bad? I've never heard that before.
I've never heard that before.
Where'd that come from? Insurance companies went bust during that time.
They certainly did.
And that was before there was the program.
It depends on what the term for annuity is, right? Because I've heard people who take monthly pensions from the corporations that they retired from, and they call it an annuity. But insurance companies most certainly went bust in the Great Depression.
So the last major insurance company that I could think of where people lost some money on annuities was Executive Life Insurance Company in the late 80s. Executive Life was right down the street from
Drexel Burnham Lambert.
Drexel, and then that's the junk bond days. If you remember back, Michael Milken was the poster child for whatever reason.
Lives in Incline Village now.
And after a little stint in prison, federal prison,
he actually has gotten extremely involved in educational research as well.
He's a brilliant guy.
Cancer research.
And I remember at the time questioning if I think he was the fall guy for a systemic issue. But anyway,
now back to this.
But I'm just trying to remember people's recollection of what was happening at the time. Executive Life Insurance, they were taken into receivership. So had you bought an annuity and was receiving some income at that time, it was questionable what you're going to receive back. And when it all went, things were said and done, people took a haircut. There was a haircut on what you received back from the insurance company. There was a reduction of benefits. So
the question
is, that was not that long ago. And today there is an insurance pool, state by state, that will back up to certain limits, but it's not unlimited.
Yeah.
On
so
how
the question
much
is, do you still think annuities are a good idea if things go bad? Well, I never thought annuities were a great idea, so I don't think I still think annuities, as we addressed in the last call, may make sense. But there are a lot of different flavors of annuities. There are hundreds of different flavors of annuities.
And the reason I think you hear us talk mostly negative about them is because the ones that get sold in the marketplace tend to have the least amount of benefits because they have huge commissions to these agents that sell these products.
And the highest amount of fees.
Although they say there's no fees, there are obviously fees built into the product. And
would I buy an immediate annuity today? No. Would not, because of the low interest rate environment.
Yeah. So here's another question. Questions@moneymatters.com. Please give me your thoughts on hard money lending to companies where the loan is secured by a first lien. How many times have you... I'll be frank. Early on in my career, 20-something, I did a couple times hard money lending.
As did I.
Did not work out too well.
Didn't like it at all. Knew the risk going in.
I think I got my money back all the time. It's just...
It is a pain.
And even if a loan's structured by a first lien on what?
That's the question. So the person borrowing the money has essentially knocked on every door but yours. Now, hard money lending... Actually, it wouldn't be considered hard money lending if it actually was a lien. It would be collateralized lending. Hard money lending is typically uncollateralized. That's hard money lending. But given the fact that this definition isn't really correct in the question. Let's just say it's a first lien lending. You're lending money to someone that cannot go through a traditional route. And why are you lending it? Because you want a higher rate of return, and they're willing to pay that higher rate of return if, in fact, they can pay that higher rate of return. But the reason they've come to you is because the risk is so great
that nobody else wants to lend them the money.
Through traditional means. Would I do...
You know, there's some online things that are springing up now, and I forget what the names are.
Oh, yeah, there's a couple of them.
You could actually go and... Because you can today...
You can lend money to people that you don't...
You can look online, you can screen the person, their story online, and loan them money.
Crazy.
I heard one of the founders when he speak at a conference a few months back.
Crazy risk.
I'm listening to that, I'm thinking...
Crazy risk.
Why in the world would you want to lend... Because think about this. Even if you're getting a 10% return, let's say you're getting 10% return on some hard money, and 9 out of 10 make good on it.
And the one doesn't. And let's just say you've lent 10 people $1,000, and 9 out of 10 paid you back exactly what you thought.
And one doesn't pay you back.
Where are you?
You're break even.
You're right at the beginning.
No.
And what'd you do? You put in all kinds of emotional time and energy into this.
If two don't pay you back, now you're underwater.
So, would I loan money that is secured by a first lien? No. Wouldn't do it. Wouldn't do it. Does it work?
Not only that.
Yeah, it works, but... Anyway.
Anyone's ever been in a position where somebody's owed you money and you try to get the money back from them...
No, that's never happened. Nah, I come from a large family. That never happened.
Well, getting the money back?
Oh, no. No one in a large family ever asked to lend money to someone else.
Yeah. I don't know. It comes back to, there's no easy ways. And the challenge in today's environment, when the feds have worked so hard to get interest rates so low with the QE 1, 2, 3, and everything else, when you've got a 10-year bond yielding under 2%, these are people. There's trillions of dollars invested at less than 2%. And investors say, I'm willing to take less than 2%.
And what you're doing is you're looking for an alternative to get higher than 2% or 1% or 0.25%. The further you reach,
the more risk there is.
And isn't it funny?
And risk cuts both ways.
Isn't it funny? The last four phone calls had everything to do with people trying to get a little bit higher yield out of their portfolio. Today.
That's a challenge in today's environment.
And so sometimes what you do, you just accept a lower yield rather than move down the risk curve.